Hello, AF Nation. Welcome to another edition of Arena Football Radio's AF Nation podcast. I am your host, once again, Chris Hopkins. We will be running down week 19 of this 2014 Arena Football League season. Today's date is July 16th. It's a little bit of a nice summer day in Chicago. Today with me, as always, I've got the lovely Christy Rose. And then we've got Mikey Wansifer again. He'll be delivering some hard-hitting analysis. And then we've got the two Connors, Connor Volpe and Connor Gomer. But I just want to run down some of the results from Week 18. Great slate of games once again. First off, we had San Jose knocking off Tampa Bay 52-43. San Antonio took Cleveland overtime, but Cleveland once again prevailed. The Cardiac Kids 50-47. Portland knocked off LA 44-31, the Battle of the Expansions. Spokane shocked. Shocked the Arizona Rattlers 73-65 on a last second touchdown in Spokane. And then New Orleans also shocked the Jacksonville Sharks 36-35, and then Orlando was able to knock off Iowa 66-33. I'm going to bring Christy and Mikey back in here to talk about some of the top storylines from Week 18. Let's start with the South Division race right now with Jacksonville losing. They're eliminated from the playoff contention. Tampa Bay losing hurts their playoff chances but doesn't eliminate them. Orlando right now is in the driver's seat for the South Division because they have a tiebreaker over Tampa Bay. Sorry this sounds so convoluted. That's where we are right now. Tampa Bay, Orlando, it's a classic war on I-4 battle for the South Division. Christy, who do you see coming out of this 2014 season with the South Division title belt?
Well, at this point, I'd have to say Orlando. They have upcoming games in New Orleans, and the next one's in Arizona, which will be a tough game, obviously. But I think a game against New Orleans, even though Adam Kennedy's been playing great and giving teams a tough go in these last couple weeks, I think that Orlando will be able to prevail and thus pull ahead of Tampa Bay for that top spot in their division.
Yeah, Tampa Bay's got a tough slate of games left. It's
absolutely.
And must win, and that was a tough loss last week against San Jose. They really battled them, but, you know, life's unfair. Game's unfair. What are you going to do? And then we have, you know, shockingly, Arizona, who has started the season with that torrid 14-0 start, you know, 18-game winning streak coming off of last year, back-to-back Arena Bowl champs. We've heard the narrative over and over again, but they're experiencing their first losing streak. Turmoil in paradise. First losing streak since 2012. Mikey, what do you see for Kevin Guy to get his team back on track and get them back to their winning ways?
Well, neither of their losses were against bad teams. I mean, these are tough teams with San Jose and Spokane, so there's not a lot of panic that I see from them. And especially, they had a 21-0 lead, maybe a little getting overconfident a bit. And I think we sort of talked about once their winning streak ended, is losing good for them? I guess we got our answer right now, learning that it probably isn't.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think right now they just need to get, just know how good they are, know how talented they are, and maybe it will be good for them in the future. But more than anything, I think it was just a tough schedule. I mean, playing at Spokane's never easy, so I think there's nothing to panic about there.
I mean, obviously Spokane's a great team, but blowing a 21-point lead 2 weeks before the playoffs, that's something that's got to leave a bad taste in Coach Guy's mouth, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you blow a 21-0 lead, I mean, especially with all the momentum that team has. And Nick Tavia had just such a good game. It's a shame that he had to do it in a losing effort. He had 388 passing yards and 9 touchdowns, but what it really came down to was in the end when he threw that interception and just allowing Spokane to get that long touchdown connection with 10 seconds left. But I think really he's got to get those guys inspired again. I think they kind of got a confidence being 14-0 and thinking they could beat anyone, and now they're kind of going back, crashing down back to earth right now. So maybe it will be something that's good for them and gives Kevin Guy something to inspire them to sort of be threatened by other teams instead of thinking they're going to win every game.
Are you saying that the Arizona's getting a little complacent? Is that? Or yeah, am I out of line for saying that?
I mean, I don't think so, because I think when they had that winning streak, just obviously the greatest that the AFL's seen, I think it kind of gave them just being a little bit overconfident, especially with all the talent they've had and winning the Arena Bowl last year. So I think it just kind of made them a little bit overconfident, but it could be something that I think Kevin Guy maybe has had a little bit of trouble inspiring his guys, because when you have a team that's that talented, you have to start looking for things to sort of explain them and get them pumped up for every game. So maybe this is something that will do that.
And all right, and not to be overlooked in that game was the reigning MVP, Urich Meyer. Ever since his return from shoulder injury, he's been playing lights-out football, and once again, he's leading their team back to a potential playoff run. Now, to talk about the South Division and the team that won the division the last 4 years since their inception, 2000, talented Jacksonville Sharks, I'm going to bring in Connor Gomer to talk with me about, you know, kind of what happened. Like I said, they've been the picture of consistency and success since their founding in 2010, winning the division every year, and with that culminating with an Arena Bowl title in 2011. So I want to talk with Connor. You know, Connor, what's the difference between this year's team and last year's team, which finished 12-6?
Well, I think the big difference has been not having Bernard Morris's legs. And I mention his legs because, honestly, R.J. Archer, he's done a fine job this year throwing the ball. He's got 108.84 QBR, and he's thrown for 83 TDs to only 12 interceptions. But if you look at his rushing yards, he only averages 2.8 yards per carry. If you look at Bernard Morris's rushing stats from 2013, he scored 11 touchdowns on the ground, he had 4.2 yards per carry, and he was really just able to create.
Now, is there something to say about Jacksonville's offensive line?
I think it definitely goes back to that. I think that R.J. Archer hasn't had the protection that he needed to be a successful quarterback in this league. And if you look at Bernard Morris with Orlando and what he's able to do with them, he's just able to create every time a play blows up. Bernard Morris is able to get extra yardage, and that extra yardage just is so effective in an offensive league like the Arena Football League. So I think the big difference this year has just been with Bernard Morris.
Okay. And now, what do the Sharks have to do moving forward? I mean, they have a lot of young pieces. They've got great guys on the outside, like such as London Crawford, who battled injuries this year. And obviously, injuries were a big factor to the Sharks' lack of success this season. So what do they have to do moving forward?
I mean, I think they need to get healthy. Jerron Harvey and London Crawford both missed 6 games. And if you have your 2 stud wide receivers injured, there's not much you can do on offense. One thing is get healthy, and also they need to keep the defense together, because one positive note on their season has been their awesome defense. And they rank 2nd in total pass defense, and they rank 5th in turnover margin, +9, and they're 2nd in sacks in the league with 36. If they keep this defense together and find some pieces for their O-line and maybe pull it all together next year, I don't see why we can't see another playoff run from them the following year.
Yeah, great coaching staff with Les Moss. You know, up front, Jerry Turner is definitely, he's a dynamic player.
Definitely.
All right, thanks, Connor. We'll have to see if Jacksonville can turn it around in 2015. I'm going to send it over to Jenny Ruddy, who's with us with our AFL Minute, to go over some of the top headlines this week around the league. We have some big news coming out of Orlando, a new owner, and some other big stuff that's happening around the league.
Here with your AFL Minute, I'm Jenny Ruddy. This is what's on the radar this week. On July 20th, an AFL legend will retire as a Rattler. The Arizona Rattlers will celebrate Alumni Day with a special player assignment and retirement for former Rattlers quarterback Sed Bonner on Sunday at 3 p.m. when the Rattlers host the Portland Thunder at U.S. Airways Center. The Rattlers will be assigned Bonner for a one-day contract to allow the quarterback to retire as an Arizona Rattler. An exciting acquisition was completed this week in Orlando. On July 15th, the Orlando Predators LLC, a company owned by David A. Siegel, founder and CEO of Westgate Resorts, purchased the Orlando Predators Arena football team. Under new ownership, the Predators will return to the Amway Center for the 2015 season. With your AFL Minute, I'm Jenny Ruddy. Keep being the best fans in sports.
All right, thanks, Jenny. Yeah, definitely a busy week for the Arena Football League. I'm going to bring back Christy in and also Mikey. We're going to go over some of the playoff landscape going into Week 19. First off, we got Orlando and Portland. Both are 1 game away from clinching a playoff berth. If either of them can pull out a victory, they have secured a playoff berth. Christy, do you see this happening for the new expansion team, Portland? I mean, they've got a pretty angry Arizona Rattlers team they got to go face. You see Portland clinching it this week, but I mean, they could also win if LA loses. So
right. I don't see them winning this game necessarily. The Arizona Rattlers are obviously coming off a 2-game losing streak. They're not happy.
What do they say? You don't poke a rattlesnake.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So you kind of have to expect the Rattlers to come out swinging in this game. So I don't expect Portland to have a terrible amount of luck in that game, but I do think that they could have luck with LA losing their game against the San Antonio Talons.
Okay.
That'll be a tough fought game between both of those teams. They're decently matched, so I think Portland could clinch in that scenario.
Okay, and then Orlando is going to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. New Orleans did just knock off Jacksonville. Adam right. Kennedy looked somewhat impressive in that game, but do you see Orlando not prevailing?
When you watch Bernard Morris, I kind of have to think that they're going to prevail in that game. I think Adam Kennedy has been doing an amazing job with the Voodoo, definitely showing a lot of promise for next season, but I see Orlando prevailing in that scenario.
All right, so Orlando is one game away from clinching the South Division, which will be their first division title since 2006.
Right.
You know, it's a storied franchise. You hate to see them like hit such a tough patch like this, but it's great to see them back and going. Rob Keefe's got that team playing at a high level, high energy coach on the sidelines, so I can see how that's translating over to the players. Now, Mikey, Philly and Tampa are there on the outside looking in. They're the two teams battling with Orlando potentially for that wild card spot. But like I said, it seems like Orlando may lock up that South Division, so it comes down to Philly and Tampa Bay for that final playoff spot in the American Conference right now. We got a love triangle of sorts when it comes down to all the tiebreakers. You've got Philly, who owns a tiebreaker over Orlando. Orlando owns the tiebreaker over Tampa, and Tampa owns the tiebreaker over Philadelphia. So right now, who do you see out of those two teams getting that last playoff berth?
Well, we're in a really interesting situation right now, just you said with all the tiebreaker situation, but the one to focus on is the last one that you said, that Tampa Bay has the tiebreaker with Philly. And I think right now that could end up being what wins it for Tampa Bay. I think there's actually a good chance that both teams just lose out the rest of the way. I mean, this week, Philly hosts San Jose. You know, that is a really tough travel for San Jose to have to go all the way to Philadelphia. So you'd like to think that might affect them a little bit. So that gives Philly an advantage. But San Jose's like one of the hottest teams in the league right now with Cleveland. They've been just tremendous recently. So that's a tough game for Philly. And then Tampa Bay's at Spokane. And once again, we saw what Spokane did last week against Arizona. So if you just say those two are losses, then next week it's Philadelphia. Philadelphia travels to Pittsburgh, which it's never easy playing at Pittsburgh. And then Tampa Bay hosts Cleveland. And I know we've said that Cleveland kind of has clinched everything possible. You know, they have home field throughout the conference playoffs, but I still think Cleveland always wants to win. They're still going to
play. You don't rest your players in the arena because it's just such a game of rhythm. You don't want to take them out of the rhythm going into the playoffs. It's like the NFL, I know that's always a big thing coming down the stretch of resting players and, you know, rest over rust, that whole debate that gets beaten to the ground. But I think in the arena, I think it's really predicated on so much rhythm of the receivers and with the quarterback and, you know, only eight players in the on each side, so
these teams are going to be trying. So it would be, I mean, you could say that these teams that have already clinched things aren't going to try as hard, but I think they're going to still put their starters out there. They're still going to want to win. They're still going to want to keep up that rhythm. So right now, it's Tampa Bay just having that tiebreaker. I think that might be what gives them the edge.
All right. And other than that, seems like the rest of the playoff spots have already set. We got the top three seeds in the National Conference set, and the top two seeds in the American Conference set. All right, thank you, Christy. Thank you, Mike. Now, Philly again is once again on the verge of making the playoffs, even though they've had an up and down season. I had the chance to talk with Anthony Carter, who is the creator and main contributor of the Philly Soul Inside blog, to talk about the Soul's 2014 season and the possibility of another postseason run. All right, I'm here with Anthony Carter, who runs the Philly Soul Insider. This is his first season covering the Soul full-time, and I want to introduce Anthony. Anthony, say hello.
Hi, Chris, thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. I'm going to get right into it. So, Anthony, how would you define the 2014 Philadelphia Soul season?
I would define it as an up-and-down season. The Soul started off to a shaky start, dropping that tough one in Arizona, and then got blown out by San Jose the next week. But as the season went on, they went on a win streak, and I guess towards the end of the season, they realized that their backs are against the wall, and it's win or stay home type of situation. So they've been winning. They won their last two games, and I think that's an up and down season, basically.
Yeah, they're a veteran team, so they know when their backs are against the wall and it's do or die. Now, they are a veteran team. They've been in the Arena Bowl the past 2 years. Why haven't they been able to match the level of success that they've achieved during those past two seasons? Because off the top of my head, I think they had a combined 27 combined regular season wins from last year and the year before, and right now they're stuck at 8-8. So why haven't they been able to have that level of success?
It's definitely a different type of game now. They have a lot of rookies, you know, Ted Jennings in his rookie season. And it's just more teams have gotten used to Seoul over the years, and they've becoming more, they've been more tough with them. I think that's one of the main reasons why. Also, on the new management, you've got a new head coach, the assistant coach, Rod Miller, helping out with the defense a little bit. And, you know, like you said, they're a veteran team. So, and you got a lot of young guys on Cleveland, guys like Tylan Lewis who can, you know, take apart their solo defense at any time. So that's what I think. You know, they're a pretty old team.
Now, Philly can't afford to lose another game. What do you feel they need to do to ensure that they win out? They've got their two remaining games are some tough games against San Jose and Pittsburgh. So what do they need to do?
I think they need to do what they've been doing the past couple of weeks, which is attacking early, scoring a lot of points, and prevent defenses from scoring touchdowns. You saw against Iowa where they scored 84 on them. And then the week after that, they won a sort of close one against Orlando. Like I said, their backs are get the one. They realize that, you know, their playoff is on the line, and knowing the field, they want to get back, and Ron Jaworski wants to get back to that Arena Bowl. So I think if they attack early, score a lot of points, Rutterball has to play to the best of his ability. The defense, their secondary, it definitely needs to step up. They get burnt too many times on the deep ball, and it's been a problem all season, so. They need to adjust on that. But the defensive line is definitely improving. Teddy Jennings is stepping up for that defensive line, getting sacks, safety.
Now, if they end up making the playoffs, they'll likely have to face Cleveland again, as Cleveland is locked up to one seed, and Philly really doesn't have a chance at the three seed. So how do you see them getting over the Cleveland hump in the first round?
Honestly, I think they can beat Cleveland. Cleveland beat And Rutterball said the same thing, you know, they're a better team than them by one point. And especially that first game, obviously you have to pick your heads off the Cleveland coming back from 17 down with a minute left and coming back to win. But and then the next game, they won on a Hail Mary, which is both times were very, very lucky plays. So. And like I was talking to this guy on Twitter about, you know, Seoul has that killer instinct, especially in playoff time. Last year they weren't expected to get out the first. They were expected to get out the first round, and turns out they moved on to the second round, and eventually the Arena Bowl. So I think they'll be fine if they face Cleveland. They've always led Cleveland during the game. If they just can hold that fourth quarter, they just need to trade that fourth quarter. I just saw Cleveland last week when they went to overtime and won it at 1-8.
You've been mentioning Teddy Jennings a lot. Obviously, he's been a dynamic playmaker these past couple weeks. What's been the key to Teddy Jennings' development during his rookie season?
Well, Teddy said it himself. He's learning the game more, which is, it's been the work in practice, and he understands the same. He has the same mindset as all the other skill players is they need to win, or else they won't be seen in the postseason. That's one of the main things, and especially when he started over Brian Robson last week against Orlando, since Brian Robson was injured, I guess he just wanted to step up and show the coaches what he has to bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
He did that, and Brian Robson is entering, he's in his prime career, which is,
yep,
and you ought to do that.
Yeah. It's definitely great to have a guy like Brian Robinson there, you know, decorated veteran to learn from. You know, watching Teddy Jennings coming off the outside, it's so impressive that speed he has is dynamic.
Right.
Now Dan Radebaugh has had, he's had shades of glory this year. The team's going to go if he goes. He's the catalyst of this team. But, you know, looking back on his career, he's only had one season with over 100 touchdowns. He's never been named to an all-arena team. Do you feel that he is an elite quarterback, or is he more just a product of the Clint Dozell system in Philadelphia?
I think he is a, you can kind of argue for both sides, but I think he is an elite quarterback. Like you said, he only did have that 1 year back in 2012 when he had over 100 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But this season so far, he has 119 quarterback rating. He has close to almost 4,000 yards, as he's been doing the past three seasons. And I think he is in runnable. Obviously, he has his moments, like you said. He overthrows a lot of receivers, especially in the Orlando game. He even acknowledged himself that he struggled throughout the game. He missed Tiger Jones on one wide open play that would have resulted in a touchdown. But Rodeball knows how to shake off those games. He's not an inconsistent quarterback. If he has a bad game, he can easily bounce back to the next game. And
now, with your insider information, how has Coach Dozell been able to keep the team on track after a series of heartbreaking losses this season? Those two to Cleveland, they had another one against Pittsburgh. They started the season with a tough loss against Arizona. How's Dozell been able to keep this team on track?
I think Dozell has been just telling the team, let's put this game behind us. I actually asked him one of the questions, and he said, it hurts, but it doesn't hurt as much. And you can see, the game against Cleveland when they lost again to the Hail Mary. The next game, they come back and bounce back and score 84 on Iowa. And earlier in the season, you saw how they lost to Cleveland again. That was the amazing comeback. And they beat San Antonio by 36 points, which was, I think that's all Dozell's doing. He's just pushing these guys to play to the best of their ability. I guess he just doesn't consider close games as losses. So,
and Tiger Jones, he's having another quiet, great season, just such a steady guy on the outside for Rodebog in that offense. How does a guy like Jones maintain the consistent level of production that he's been able to accrue during his career?
Well, that's just been the quarterback that he's getting the ball. It's just been Dan Rodebog. Rodebog's feeding him all the time. He's getting deep now, especially since Ryan McDaniel's done for the season. Tiger Jones is stepping up even more. I mean, also, obviously, Tiger has other receivers on the side, like T.C. Lacy, Marquise White. But, I mean, to see the season, Tiger Jones has 14,000 yards, 31 touchdowns. But I think he's just another veteran player who knows the game well, who knows most of the defensive backs, especially when he watches film.
Yeah.
He's just been...
Yeah, it's definitely an advantage to, to really get a grasp of the spacing and everything that goes on with, finding space within defenders and everything. All right, Anthony, well, I will let you go, get you back to enjoying another summer day, but thank you for taking the time to talk with me, and good luck with the rest of this Philadelphia Soul season.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, no problem. Now I'm going to bring back Mikey and Christy in, and I'm going to bring the two Connors in. We're going to have a little panel discussion to see who they feel deserves to win the Cutters Receiver of the Year Award. I'm just going to open it up right now for anybody who thinks they have a good argument for who they think is going to win it.
Well, I think it's got to be Dominic Goodman. I think last
shots week. Fired.
I'm going to take that first step. Just already last week, what he did is kind of what's leading to this. His clutch play against San Antonio. He caught that 5-yard touchdown pass. Then, of course, there's a 2-point conversion afterwards. But if it wasn't for that touchdown catch, then there wouldn't have been an OT. Then he also just the play of the year potentially in the AFL right now when he caught that Hail Mary touchdown pass against Philadelphia. And just really, even aside from just their rows that he's had at the end of the games, he has for over 1,400 yards. He's approaching 1,531 touchdown catches. And he's just been a tremendous target for Shane Austin and kind of helped him get introduced to that offense and sort of led to what could be an MVP season for Shane Austin. You never know. So I'm going to take the first shot out there and say that I think Dominic Goodman's the best receiver in the league right now.
He's least league interceptions, but, I mean, he's had a lot of help on the outside with Tyron Lewis taking on some of the pressure off.
Yeah, certainly having him on the other side helps, but I still think Goodman got it right now.
Well, Mikey, I do respect your opinion, but I have to disagree with you. I think the guy who deserves it most is Marco Thomas, and it's not like Marco Thomas is the only guy on his team who's catching balls. I mean, Darius Reynolds also has 1,600 receiving yards this year, but Marco Thomas leads the league this year in receiving yards and 1,785 yards. And he's also only two touchdown receptions behind the leader, Rod Windsor. And if you want to talk about having quarterback issues, Iowa's had anything but a consistent quarterback this year, changing their quarterback around from Carson Kaufman to J.J. Raderink, and he's in the lead in receiving yards and approaching the lead for touchdowns. So that's why I think he deserves it.
And he's got the attention of the whole secondary on it. On him almost every game.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't ignore him. The numbers he consistently puts up each game. And
But does he benefit from not having anybody else? I mean, yeah, Darius Reynolds gets some of the passes, but I mean, just chuck it up and let Marco come down with it. Is that kind of is he benefiting from that?
I don't think so. I think he benefits most of having someone on the other side like Darius Reynolds. I think that while the attention is on Marco Thomas, you can't leave Darius Reynolds alone either. It's kind of like the Chicago Bears' two wide receivers and Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. Once you ignore one, the other one's going to come out with a touchdown. So I think Marco Thomas, he's just excelled so much in that Iowa offense without a quarterback that he deserves it.
If we want to
For another person without a quarterback, we got...
If we want to talk a guy without a quarterback, I mean, Donovan Morgan, I don't want to be mean, but to say that he hasn't had a quarterback is probably accurate. I mean, the whole year there... Every LA Kiss quarterback, if you combine their statistics, their quarterback rating is 68.82. That's pretty rough. And considering that he's second or third in almost every receiving statistic, still even with that, and he also, by the way, doesn't have anything close to a second wide receiver on his team, but he still managed to put up over 1,600 yards receiving. And then he's also been remarkably consistent. You'd think a team like San Jose, who he has to play relatively frequently, who has one of the best secondaries in the league, would be able to shut him down. But he's actually had some of his best games this season against teams like San Jose, against teams like Arizona, against teams like Spokane. And in every game this year, he's either had 100 yards receiving or at least one touchdown. So he's been remarkably consistent despite all the things that come with being an expansion team. So I've got to throw my hat in there for Donovan Morgan. I just think he's been really impressive this year.
He also has the best touchdown celebration in the game with the Captain Morgan.
Easily. Easily.
Little feel to the Donovan Morgan fire. There is none of these other receivers had their coach send out his email address asking for a quarterback. So that's Bob at LAKissFootball.com.
You know things are bad when the coach does that. It's a subtle hint.
Yeah, an open tryout for the country for a signal caller in LA.
Can't really blame him either.
And Morgan, I mean, he puts up numbers every year. It seems like he's such a consistent performer in this league. I mean, last year he was with New Orleans, who was. Went through similar quarterback troubles last year due to injuries.
Yeah,
and
poor guy
was able to keep putting up numbers. So.
And he's really had no consistent wide receiver next to him, too, to like take any of the pressure off. It's really just been all in at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, that's what Connor was saying. I mean, they had Marquise White, who just didn't perform, say the least there. And then,
come on, jump on the Donovan Morton bandwagon with me.
Like, yeah. There's plenty of
room.
Did he just convince you? Did you just jump off the Goodman ship?
I feel like not having someone around him can also be a reason why he's putting up those numbers, just sort of the only option.
Yeah, I would love to see his, like, target rate. Like, how many of those passes does he target? Like, target rate and then catch rate.
He's got a lot of targets, but there's also, I mean, he's also got a lot of targets against some serious coverage. They're taking coverage at his side, you know, so, like, I agree, even though there isn't, like, someone else out there to take a lot of catches, people can also be catching 100 balls a year. He's running into the gamut of the defense.
His touchdown celebration's definitely sweating me a little bit.
Can't blame you.
Well, so what do you guys think about Rob Windsor as a potential candidate for this? You know, he has the most touchdowns, 39 touchdowns. He gets to play with Davila every single week.
Exactly. I was going to say he gets to play with Davila every week.
Yeah,
so how is that not a...
It's a fun treat to watch that kind of...
It's a great treat, but, I mean, he's got the best signal caller, arguably, in the league throwing it to him. So, I mean, he knows he's got consistency in the pocket every week.
It's true.
And the best offensive line in the game.
Best offensive line. He's got guys like Tyson Poots and Kerry Reed and guys on the outside.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but he also has another wide receiver that's up there with him in Purify. The two of them have been doing an outstanding job, but I think Windsor deserves to be mentioned in this group.
He does lead the leading touchdowns, but I mean, does he benefit from Davila? We don't know. We haven't seen Windsor play in another team without Arizona.
That'd be interesting to see him have an unsteady quarterback.
I mean, yeah. Do you think that he could go on to a team like Iowa and put up the numbers like Marco Thomas is putting up this year?
I think he potentially could, but what Thomas is doing is very impressive. So, nothing to take away from him. But
yeah, I think that's, for you, for the Goodmans and the Windsors out there, I think you got to put put those guys in a guy like a Donovan McMorgan shoot. Yeah, get the perspective of a guy like Thomas or Morgan who are playing with five different quarterbacks or whatever it is this year, you know? So I think it's an interesting perspective. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Greg Carr, who's also put up great numbers as a rookie in Orlando, the big guy out of Florida State. Right now he's got over 1,300 yards, 107 receptions, 36 touchdowns. He's just a freaking beast on the outside.
And I'll say this. If there was one guy that maybe in a short yardage situation that you needed someone in the end zone, I'd probably go with Greg Carr just with having just his size in the end zone. That if I could choose one guy in that type of, you know, like red zone situation, I'd probably go with Greg Carr.
Throw up a jump shot and tell him to get the rebound.
Yeah, exactly. He's been ridiculous in those situations, even when you go back to Florida State. So that I think maybe he needs to work on doing that like consistently, not just those end zone targets.
Yeah.
But I think he's still a rookie, so there's going to be some.
Yeah, I mean,
things.
He's still working on the spacing. He was playing in Canada earlier, last season. So he's still working on his spacing in the Arena League. And then I think another great guy, we mentioned him with Marco Thomas, is his running mate Darius Reynolds, who's putting up unbelievable numbers again. You know, even with Thomas, he's still been able to continue his production. 107 receptions, 1,600 yards, 30 touchdowns, and it's been well documented the inconsistent quarterback play in Iowa, and so it's very impressive to see a guy like Reynolds put those numbers up. And he's a young player. We'll see him around for a while. And then there's obviously the guys like Tiger Jones who just put numbers up every year. Consistency, quiet consistency, this strong silent type of Gary Cooper, as Tony Soprano would say. And I don't know. It's a great league. It's a great league for receivers. And, you know, the voters of this, who are the coaches, will definitely have a difficult decision to choose. A lot of great candidates out there for Cutter's Wide Receiver of the Year. Now, looking forward, we got week 19, seven games this week, four games on Saturday, two games on Sunday, and then another edition of Monday Night Football on ESPN on Saturday. The first game of the day will be Jacksonville at Cleveland. Then they go to Orlando at New Orleans, Pittsburgh at Iowa, and then Saturday finishes it off with San Antonio at L.A., which will be on CBS Sports Network. And then the next day, Sunday, July 20th, will be San Jose at Philly, must win for Philly, and then Portland at Arizona, see if Arizona can rebound from their back-to-back losses. And then our Monday night game, which will be on ESPN2, will be another must-win game for Tampa Bay Storm as they travel to Spokane to take on the Shock. Now I'm going to bring back Mikey and Christy to go over some of the storylines going into this week. Obviously a lot of playoff implication. That's kind of been the big theme as we've gone down the stretch of this season. Tampa Bay and Philly, as we've noted before, both are must-win games. I mean, next two games are must-win games, and they're going up against some tough competition. Do you guys see either of those teams winning the next two games, Tampa or Philly?
I think it's going to be tough. Spokane and San Jose are two of the toughest teams in the league. They've had their playoff positions locked up for the past couple weeks now. So they're both going into must-win scenarios. I could see maybe Philly pulling off something in this scenario, but I think Tampa Bay is going to be hard-pressed.
Yeah, I agree that Philly has the better chance of the two to win this week, just with San Jose having to travel so far. But Tampa Bay at Spokane is just not easy, especially with Eric Meyer really being healthy. I mean, that team's dangerous.
Yeah, he's really feeling himself right now. He's feeling himself.
Even though he threw three interceptions in the last game, he's still had a couple rushing touchdowns and six passing touchdowns. And most importantly, he was there when it mattered most at the end of the game. So, I mean, if I had to choose one team this week to win out of the two of them, it's Philly. But really, they both have tall tasks ahead of them.
Yeah. Fear the beard. And then, you know, then we've got Orlando. As we mentioned before, they are one game away from clinching the South Division, which would be their first division title since 2006. I think that's an interesting note going into this weekend. You know, an historic franchise in this league who is going through, you know, some changes right now. They just got a new owner. So, you know, moving forward, I think it would be great for them if they can, you know, capture this South Division title.
Yeah, well, I would agree. I think that this is a good opportunity for them. You know, Tampa Bay, we just spoke about it. They have a really tough matchup coming up, and, you know, they can clinch the division with a loss from Tampa Bay, too. They don't even necessarily have to win over New Orleans. So I think this is a great weekend for Orlando to clinch the South Division.
Feels like the old school 90s right now with this classic matchup of Orlando-Tampa Bay going down the stretch. Nice war on I-4 for the South Division. I love it. As a purist, I love that. All right, just a couple reminders here. Make sure to tune in to our Net10 Wireless Arena Football Saturday on CBS Sports Network. We've got the San Antonio Talons looking to break their losing streak as they travel to L.A. to take on the Kiss. Game will be at 10 o'clock Eastern on CBS Sports Network. And then also make sure to catch our Net10 Wireless AFL and ESPN, a little Monday night treat for you. Tampa Bay at Spokane at 8:30. Game will be on ESPN2. Make sure to go on our website, arenafootball.com, to vote for the Arena Football Hall of Fame Class of 2014. And for more information about Jason's Week, which will be going on this week, and the Jason Foundation, and see what you can do to help. If you want to interact with other AFL diehards on the AF Nation message board, please check out our website and comments. And make sure to like us on Facebook. It's our Arena Football page. And Twitter and Instagram, our handle is at AFL Arena Ball. And listen up, fans, because we got a chance for you to get involved in our very own weekly podcast. This week marks the beginning of our AF Nation Podcast Contest. Hashtag AF Nation Pod Contest. Let me break it down for you. We will be selecting one game for you to guess the outcome of. As the weeks go by, the predictions will get harder and harder. All you have to do is predict the correct outcome to be eligible to move on next week. Easy enough. This week we're looking for the winner for the matchup between the San Antonio Talons and LA Kiss. Being featured on our podcast isn't incentive enough. The final winner of this contest will win an Arena Bowl-themed prize package. So give us your prediction and show off your arena football knowledge. So this week, all we're looking for is for you just to predict the winner of the San Antonio-LA game. All you got to do is you just got to say, San Antonio-LA, go on our Facebook page, comment on the post, just say who you think's going to win, San Antonio-LA, and then give the hashtag AF Nation Pod Contest. And what you can win, if it's not already incentive enough to come on here and be featured on this award-winning podcast, you will be eligible to win an Arena Bowl-themed prize package. So make sure to go on and give your prediction. I want to thank all of our guests, Philly Soul Insider Blog, Anthony Carter, all of my correspondents, my people, Christy Rose, Mikey Wansifer, Connor Gomer, Connor Volpe. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, AF Nation. I'm Chris Hopkins, signing off.